Welcome to the Legends Among Us podcast, a podcast devoted to the veterans and troopers of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. My name is Chaplain Jason Phipps, and it is an honor to host this show after nearly 2 months of no interviews, no podcast time, thanks to the government shutdown. I actually have like an episode that I will probably upload tonight with Colonel Hertling from 1st Brigade, but today we have with us Sergeant Major, former Regimental Command Sergeant Major Michael McEnroy, who was our 26th, just most recently change of responsibility with Sergeant Major Michaud, but was our 26th Regimental Sergeant Major in 3rd Cavalry Regiment. So Sergeant Major Mac, it's great to have you on.
Well, great to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. I know we were talking a little bit about LTP and NTC, and we'll, for those of you who don't know, we'll get into those acronyms. We just got back from LTP, 10 days out at Fort Irwin, California, which is out in the middle of nowhere. I'm used to the high desert, so the weather was great. We did what is called leader training program, which I know you're familiar with, Sergeant Major. And we spent about 2 weeks out there just kind of doing almost like a train up for NTC, where we did some MDMP. We did a war sim using CPCE. We got to do some site recons. We got to meet our OCs and our coaches. So it was a good productive time. We probably had about 150, 160 officers and senior leaders out there. But that was my first time there. I know you've been there multiple times. So before we get into that, I would love for the audience to just hear a little bit of your background, because I know a little bit of your background, but I would love for everybody else to kind of hear what how you came in the Army, how you ended up at 3CR.
So I came in 97.
Okay.
Right. So a little bit of time ago, decided as from a very small town, Oklahoma, working. I dropped out of college. College just didn't seem like what I wanted to do. And I decided one day, you know what? I think the Army is where I need to be. So I went to a recruiter, didn't tell nobody like at all. Signed up, went to the test. And then when I got my ship date, it was about a 2 week gap. That's why I told all my family, hey, I'm leaving. Well, considerable, but they were not too happy, but I was fine, right? So I shipped out as infantryman, right? I went in, the recruiter wanted to be airborne ranger. They said, can't do that. So I came in infantry and worked my way, you know, as close as I could to accomplish those goals. But I was 11 Mike, because that was what they were short on, right? Okay. That was a mechanized Bradley style. So I was there for several years as 11 Mike at Fort Riley. They changed 11 Bravo. Then I got to kind of bounce around to different formations, kind of end up in the heavy side, striker, you know, those formations like that, with a little bit of stint in 10th Mountain and Ranger, well, as a RI down at ARTB. And then went to the Sergeant Major's Academy, and I got sent here to actually 3CR with Tiger Squadron as their ops. Moved up the regiment, and then went down the street as a CSM for 27 Cav, and then got selected to be the RCSM.
Just for my own awareness, just my own understanding, how does the process work in terms of selecting you? You hear this progression of becoming the Ops Sergeant Major, and then you leave 3CR versus coming directly to 3CR as the Regimental Sergeant Major. I'm sure that there was some timing that impacted that, but how was that decision made to bring you back here?
It all depends on, you know, the evaluation boards we do every year. Okay. And then kind of where you fall in that pecking order, the OML, as they call it. And then they have to base that on what's available. It's a lot of timing.
Sure.
You know, I have a lot of good friends that went different places they didn't expect because of timing.
Okay. Right?
They're probably the best one for the job, but the jobs weren't there for them to fall into. So,
okay.
Luck.
Yeah.
Very lucky to have the opportunity to be the RCSM.
Sure.
I was excited. I got the phone call actually from the 24th. He called me and says, okay. Hey, Mike, what are you doing? You checked your email? And he told me that I got selected to be the next RCSM.
I know I kind of caught like the last year of your time, but one of the things that obviously is integral to your story to being in the Army itself is the fact that you are married and have kids, but you have lived kind of a geo-bachelor life for a number of years. And I know that there's some young listeners in our audience who may have considered that or might be considering that type of lifestyle. Should they have a long-term career? But how has that worked out for you?
So when I got selected to go to the Sergeant Major's Academy, like I said, I had got sent back to Fort Riley. My oldest had just started college. My middle one was a junior. And then my youngest, who would have been fine to move around. And And my wife and I sit down and talked about it because I was already on orders to go to Fort Polk. And the plan was to do 12 months. I'd drop retirement and, you know, I get to come home and, you know, be happy with the career I had. Well, I got selected. We talked about it. And it was actually a goal from the time I was a specialist, you know, doing all the boards and all that fun stuff, saying, hey, I wanted to be a CSM. And this was my opportunity. And my wife knew that and she was completely supportive. So we had to sit and talk about it and like, what do we want to do? Because that meant 8 months in Louisiana, 10 months in Texas at a minimum down at El Paso for the academy. And then from there, we didn't know. And that was 8 years ago this month.
Okay.
That we made that decision. And again, we've still been going with it. And what has that bought me and my family? Like my oldest is a high school teacher now. He graduated from K-State. My middle one's doing well. He's, you know, he got his CDL. He's driving trucks for a place there in Kansas. And my youngest one is in the middle of his VoTech down at Salina Tech for HVAC. It gave them stability after following me around for so many years. They have a place to come back. That's home.
Yes.
Right? So when crisis hits, right, when life happens, they always know they have a safe space to come back to.
Okay.
And they have somebody there that's going to say, receive them and make sure everything's okay, but also help them get back on track.
So it's almost like a trade-off. Well, it is a trade-off, let's be honest, because you're trading off time with Melissa to provide stability and predictability for your kids, but it is possible. And I don't know, maybe you have some insight into this because you've been in both worlds. Like, is there one area that is more stable than the other in terms of hauling your kids around but staying together versus perhaps leaving that part of your family behind one place while you travel around?
Well, I enjoyed the time. So our last big jaunt before we went back to Kansas was down in Fort Benning. I mean, I was involved with Cub Scouts. You know, we had a very solid, you know, church we went to there on post, but they're young.
Yeah.
Right. And
they needed you around.
And I was there. Right. And as you get older, it's hard to adjust to change. Right.
Sure.
I mean, we do it a lot. So I think we understand a little more. You come into a new environment, you have to insert yourself. But sometimes kids don't get that. Right. And that's the difference between military kids and those who don't experience that. They have been forced into that. And that was something that we were very aware of, especially with my oldest starting college. Wanted to give him everything we could to help continue that on. And then my youngest being a junior, we wanted to give him a chance to graduate from the high school. So I don't think there's really the stability part. It's just how you adjust and how you manage that. Right.
Right.
The wife and I, we talk as much as we can. Right. We talk throughout the day, you know, every day we're talking. I send them texts, check on them, call every once in a while when I can. Tell you, they call me when they need something. While we were in Korea, I had an alarm that went off every Saturday. It said family FaceTime.
Yeah.
And I called and we all did a FaceTime as a family, you know, because every month I go back. I drive back up to Kansas to see the family. I'm always going back. They always know I'm coming at certain points. This month I went back twice. I'm going back for Thanksgiving as well. So that is the hard part, right? That's the strain, just that back and forth, right? Yeah. That does get hard. They have supported me for 20 plus years.
Sure.
So it's my turn.
Sure.
Right.
Well, and so in the midst of that, there is predictability even in, because they know you're going to come twice a month. They know you're going to reach out to them over the phone. I remember looking at Colonel Barta's calendar in Korea, and he did something very similar where he had one time of the day dedicated to reaching out to Laura and the girls. So that's good to hear. And all these years in the Army, and you've made it happen in both arenas, bringing your family with you, leaving them at home, it is possible.
It is. It's hard.
Sure.
And it does get to the point where you have to find something to fill your time when it's not.
Right.
Right. So when I go back to my camper, right, I had to find something to fill my time. For me, it's also a place that I can just have quiet. Right. And it's nothing against, I mean, I like people. I'm not
antisocial.
Antisocial person, but it's just that quiet.
Sure.
Right. Because you put fires out. Or you have those interactions all day, right? You talk to your family, but then there's those bad days.
Yeah.
Where it allows you to go kind of decompress.
Right.
Right. Go for a run, go for a walk, go to the gym, go do something like that to get your mind off of that.
which I think is good. I mean, I don't want to go down too much of a rabbit hole, but when we talk about like H2F and we're talking about mental resiliency and physical resiliency with regards to the domains of H2F, what you're describing to me, I'm thinking, how can we apply this to troopers who are in the barracks? They have a busy day of maybe they're turning wrenches on a striker, or they're doing sticks or live fires, and they just need a quiet time when they get back out of the field or when they get home from the motor pool. And the barracks may or may not be that place. It's definitely not a camper in the middle of nowhere on a lake, but you're actively seeking out those opportunities, not to necessarily be distracted by like video games or your phone, but to find peace, because our brains need rest too. Mm. I'm thinking about, as I know has been a passion of yours for a number of years, is the well-being of soldiers and troopers in the barracks. When you were here, but even perhaps before that, what have you observed have been some of the things that maybe we could do better in terms of providing that? Because it's worked for you and it could work for them as well.
I guess it's personal experience, right? Yeah. So again, not to get too far down, like I grew up on a farm, mm-hmm. you know, youngest, you know, so I had a lot of time by myself. So I'm fine being by myself. Some people though, some people strive for that human contact. And that is a hard thing, you know, now with the social media, the video game, and right, they're on a headset, they're still talking, but they're not really getting a contact.
Sure.
So the barracks can be a good thing or a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. You either put people in a situation where they're around people and they're uncomfortable.
Right.
Right. Or you put people in a situation where they're isolated and they don't have anybody to reach out to because they don't know anybody.
Sure.
And trying to figure out how do we build that. Yeah. Right. And I think you build that when you go out to do your training, right? Right now doing sticks and live fires, that's where they're going to build relationships.
Yeah.
That's going to last. It's going to get them through and help them, you know, adapt and become, you know, a member of a team.
Right.
And have a purpose.
Right.
Right. Because that's the hardest thing is, what is your purpose? You join the Army for a purpose, like to serve, mm-hmm. but when you get stuck in the barracks,
yeah,
1900 at night, nobody's talking to you.
Yeah.
Because you're brand new. Like, what is your purpose there?
Right.
And then there's that rabbit hole. It's just like a kid that goes off to college for the first time.
Sure.
They're away from home. They don't have the safety blankets, right? So they're going to start looking for something to comfort them.
Sure.
So right now, this training that we're doing, or the regiment's doing, I'm sorry, it's not we no more. It's the regiment, right? So that is where they're going to build that team and those connections with their friends, with their you know, squad mates.
Sure.
And they're going to have a little bit of hardship. They'll come back and they'll talk about how awesome it was. They're going to get ready to go. They go, NTC, it's going to be horrible. They're gonna talk about how awesome it was when they come out of it.
Yeah. You
know, all the stuff that nobody else will know, but they'll know about it.
100%. Right? Okay. So that's a great dovetail into going back to what we were originally talking about, LTP, leader training program. 2 weeks of kind of train up in preparation for NTC. Our rotation begins mid-February. It goes into March. Speak a little bit. This is my first LTP. I know you've done multiple. What is your perspective on LTP in terms of getting leaders ready to head into the box?
So it's a good rep, especially with the regiment having changed out so many leaders.
Yeah.
Right. This summer, right, we've changed out so many, and it allowed those leaders to work together, put them in an environment where they're not getting to go home at night.
Right.
Right. They're there together. Mm-hmm. They're learning some of their isms. They're starting to build some of that connection. Now it's not going to be like 2 weeks is not enough time to meld and become one, but it allowed them to kind of go see things and, you know, at the RCO get to kind of push stuff out with the SCOs and the CSMs getting to kind of work together. Again, it's the initial step to start building that team and that bond that's going to take us all the way through like Korea.
Yep.
And what comes next. Because NTC is NTC. It's not easy.
Sure.
Right? It's a condensed timeline that you're going to get there on the ship, right? You're going to get off the train and you're going to build combat power quickly. And everybody's going to be going 100,000 different ways. And it's going to take leaders there to help guide and keep people engaged.
Okay.
Right? And some leaders don't know. Right? And they're going to be overwhelmed, and we need to be there. Like, we need to be there, you know, present.
Right.
To see, say, hey, wait a minute. Hey, come here. Are you doing okay? This is what you need to be doing. It's about learning and getting better.
Okay.
Right? Because as you come in, you're going to be getting all the vehicles in, hopefully safely.
Yeah.
Right? And then you're going to go out. you're going to deploy out of the box, which is a pretty dangerous spot time, right? Because it's just a mass exodus out in to the train area.
Right.
Right. You're going to get out there and you're going to start learning. And then every day is going to be something new, right? You're going to take what I did bad yesterday. I'm going to take some feedback and I'm going to make it better. Mm. And by the time you come out, it'd be great. But that redeployment is another one of the more risky times, right? Because okay. Not everybody wants to get back to the barn. Everybody wants to get back to the showers. They want to get back to the food trucks.
Right.
Right. The PX. Yeah. All that fun stuff. But patience is and leaders' involvement and engagement is going to be important.
Yeah.
To get everybody back there safely and just make sure they are on task with priorities of work. What is our priority when we get back?
Yep.
All right. For some, unfortunately, it's not to go take a shower. It's to get your truck ready to start cleaning and doing maintenance on it.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Ag wash.
Yeah. You know?
So my understanding is, again, I've been to JRTC, jumped in, used to like, you know, forming up and little AAs everywhere. But here, we're fighting geographically displaced from each other. I know like the ALOC will be separate from the Rage, from the Rise. You've been to Warfighter. You know how we have co-located the expando vans. But to fight displaced, what are some of the issues that we might experience in that environment?
Well, you think about it, right? You're together. Mm-hmm. It's easy. If I can't get a hold of you, guess what? I can just walk out.
Yeah.
And I can get the answer I'm looking for, right? So now you're going to put people in positions where as they push out, it's going to be uncomfortable, right? You're going to have a lot of people uncomfortable and then having to make decisions based on commander's intent if they cannot get clarity. If I can't pick up a radio and say, hey, what is this? Or, you know, type it in, maybe our network goes down. But I still have to fight. Commander's intent is going to be important. What am I supposed to be doing? And does this decision support that to get us to the X?
So the commanders are going to have to make decisions in the absence of leaders at higher echelons giving them guidance in some cases.
And that's why the orders, you know, the order of the commanders, that's why that's important.
Yes.
To make sure you're doing rehearsals.
Yep.
And all the fun stuff that goes with it that takes time, right? Because guess what? Those rehearsals aren't going to be walking on a map anymore. They could be dispersed, trying to visualize what you see based on what is being described over the radio, over whatever medium that we're using.
Sure.
Right. And that is important to do the before, right? So as you're setting in the Ruba, preparing those conversations, those type of rehearsals got to be solid. Right. That's where LTP comes in, right? Because you understand what the commander's saying.
Yeah.
You understand how he talks and what he wants. So when you're dispersed doing a rehearsal, it's not the first time you're hearing it. You can visualize exactly what he has in mind and what he wants you to do.
Okay.
And if you don't, you ask those questions. And you have to have an environment that's open to that. If you don't know what he's saying, but you're scared to ask, that's not the good way to be.
Right.
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 And I think the regiment is in a spot where it is fine to ask.
Yes.
Right. The commander wants you to ask.
He does.
He wants you to understand what he's saying. And that way everything's clear and everybody's moving in the right direction.
Agreed. And I think for the most part, LTP is meant to flesh that out a little bit. Leaders all the way down to even like the troop command level, but also the platoon level, ideally have an understanding of what is happening on the battlefield. That was partially why we did the SimX. Mm-hmm. And to some degree, even the sergeants major understand what we're doing. Although you guys, what I noticed, you have your own room. Like there was a conference room just for the sergeants major. And they let me come in and hang out. And when I went out on the site recon, I went with all the sergeants major. So it was good to hang out with them. But when I think about Joe, will he understand the directives that the RCO has, like the commander's intent relayed by his squad leader or even his team leader?
The goal would be 100%.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
It's like, oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, but I understand. Right.
But it's just like, you know, I can look back as when I was an RI and I can even remember, I'm not too old to remember when I was in Ranger School, right? And I think you can look at that and just say, did you know everything that was going on every day when you were a student? Not at all. Right. Yeah. And you were a smaller group.
Yeah.
And as you start getting a bigger organizations, it is very hard for the information to go. You want to say 100%. The squad leaders are going to, you know, PL is going to put it out. But every time it comes down, it gets kind of watered down in what it is, right? The only hope that you have is that these kids understand what my objective is, mm-hmm. where I'm going, yeah. what my mission is when I get there, right? Because in a grand scheme of it, that objective, that mission supports the commander's intent. So as long as they understand why they're going to that objective, then they're, even if they don't understand, know what the commander's intent was,
yeah,
right? They know what their commander's intent was, hopefully,
right?
Because he's going to regurgitate all this, right?
Yep.
As long as they know what the mission is and their objective is, mm-hmm. and what they're, who's on their left and right and all that fun stuff, they'll be fine. Because I mean, I remember being a young squadron just running in the streets of Iraq just yeah. to get to this objective, because this is, was important for the greater mission, right? And you may not understand kind of what all was going on, because we had Marines, we had all kind of people converge on certain things, and it still worked out because you accomplished your mission. As long as you can get to the X, you're going to help everybody else get to their X, and then as a whole, you'll meet that intent. As long as you get there with,
yeah, some I would say some violence of action,
some still a little bit.
Take Iowa South, one of our secondary objectives. So troopers understand the mission at the lowest level, ideally. Obviously, there's going to be some issues with communication. I know, like when we weren't even in the box, got jammed. So I know that they will jam communications. I don't know how long they do that for, like if it's for one of the phases of the operation or if they just do it for a indiscriminate yeah. period of time. People have to, again, operate in the absence of clear guidance and direction from higher headquarters.
You know, the hard part of that is, does everybody have graphics? Does everybody have a map?
Well, yeah, analog versus digital.
Did everybody have the ability when they are getting jammed?
Yeah. Right,
do they know where they're going? Do they know where they are?
Yeah. Right?
Are they all doing the map checks and making sure that we're all aware of how to get there, right? If I don't have GPS, if I don't have this, right? What does it look like on the ground? And that in itself is challenging.
Sure.
Because when I'm walking, I pull a compass out. It's easier
than
when you're on a striker. Yeah. You're on when you pull a compass out, you're trying to navigate with a map and this, and you're trying to be that one. I just got promoted sergeant. We're in Bosnia, and I was made a TC on one of the gun trucks. And my platoon sergeant said, "All right, well, you're in charge," and put me as a lead truck. Mm-hmm. I was good. I was map, GPS, mm-hmm. no issues. Well, we hit a bump. The power cord cut. So then I had to pull a compass out with a map, and I'm trying to look at roads, and it was stressful because that was the first. I mean, we had trained on it, right? GPS was not really, I mean, we had a big old plugger, but it wasn't like it is today, right? Yeah. Where you can just look at, oh, I got a satellite map on my phone. Right. I know exactly where I am. It's hard. You know, if we don't train it, it's going to be even much more harder when we get into those environments. And NTC is designed to make sure that we experience something like that before we get in combat.
Sure.
And before the cost is lives and not just frustration and time. And then you add in nighttime because the desert gets dark, and it's a whole different animal, right? You got a lot of stuff out there.
Yes.
That you got to be careful about. Wadis and draw. It's a mess.
Yeah. I saw some of the pictures of Bradley's rolled over.
And the hard thing is that's going to require leaders to do the right thing. Make sure they're wearing seat belts. Make sure we're gunner's restraint harnesses. Make sure these drivers understand if I am unsure, then I'm stopping and somebody's going to get out and they're going to walk ahead of me and make sure the ground is straight.
Well, there's some statistic that we were just talking about the other week that there's a probably 80% decrease in accidents happening if everybody shows up, including leaders, not just the TCs and the driver, but the leaders show up for a safety brief.
Yeah.
Versus just like a few people or not doing it at all. That's pretty impressive.
It's significant, right?
It is.
And you're like, well, why don't we all do that then?
Human nature.
If it's that easy, right?
I know.
But there's always something else that's going to say, oh, I got to be here. I got to do this.
Of course.
I got to go. Competing
requirements.
You know, I got to go to battalion for.
So real world story. We talked about this briefly, and I was actually talking to one of the chaplains about it this morning who was there in August of 2023 before you guys went to Korea the first time. Storm of the century happened at NTC. Like the first time in 80 years, there was like a tropical storm that I don't know if it evolved into a hurricane, but it was pretty significant emotional event for 3CR in the box.
It was a hard one. And this illustrates a lot of the struggles that we're going to have still, right, with the SFRG and getting the messaging out. Another RCO, I did something, it was horrible. It was putting the message out, the video, trying to say, hey, we're fine. We did a follow-up to again, say, hey, everybody is okay. But again, you have those who are unaware. I had some stories that went out that weren't true, but they were out there. So you had to reel them back in because it was significant. Like, people knew their loved ones were away. Mm-hmm. Out in the middle of a desert is all they're being told, right?
Yeah.
We let soldiers have their phones back, but it was like, they're all gonna, you know, left alone. Nobody's helping them, right? But we pulled everybody into, like, Rajesh. You saw Rajesh?
Yeah. It's massive.
It's massive, big, yes. Huge concrete,
yep,
buildings. Like, they're almost barracks out there.
Yeah.
That the soldiers stayed in. And none of them were on the vehicles, right? I think we stayed in Ujin, and it was wood, but it was still good enough, right? Still better than the vehicle, still better than setting in a wadi where you get washed away. We had people back in the white cell back on Aruba, right? They were staying in tents. But it was interesting because we had to collapse the entire regiment down and get them all in place, get accountability, get them all set. And then we had to stop. Like, yeah. We stopped for 2 days, maybe a day and a half. And then you had to redo and restart and uncoil and get all back into the fight and get people's minds back into that. Mm-hmm. We still have a fight left. We still have more to go. That was a challenge in itself, that leaders had to get kids motivated again to want to go, because a lot of people's stuff was soaked. The whole field craft and how do I, waterproof my stuff, right? I mean, I think the two buildings, the RCO I slept with, they flooded both nights. That was a lot of fun. But again, everyone was out in the box. Nobody went back to hide. Nobody, like, we were all out there together.
Yeah.
Right? We all had the same stuff. I mean, we were in getting a brief from the regimental talk, and there was a sheet of water coming down in the middle of it because it was two connexes that were put together. As they were trying to brief us on everything, is everybody set? You know, and when we walked in, it just started raining. When we walked out, it was ankle deep water that had just flooded the entire area.
Yeah.
And we were walking through. It was amazing to see how quickly that can become so treacherous. It's good that we did move everybody in, because it would not have been a good time. It could have been very, very bad if we wouldn't have moved everybody into what we did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that sand, it just doesn't absorb water.
No.
So it's going to form.
It runs fast.
Yeah. I believe it. So you all kind of weathered that storm and came out of it. Obviously, there were some lessons to be learned, because that's just something that you just can't predict or control. Yeah. But you all managed to finish training, finish your time in the box. The impression I get is that you're just going to get hammered, and then they're going to reset you, and then you're going to go back and kind of do it, like, at least do the final surge on Rajesh.
We went west to east, and so we had to go all the way up Goldstone, which is a long trip. I don't think you are doing that one. I'm happy for you, but we fought down, yes. and it just it was constant. There was only breaks. We did the mid row, which is the mid AAR that they kind of do, kind of a green book. Hey, this is kind of where you are now. This is kind of where you improved and some stuff. And then we fought into Rajesh and on. Like, so Rajesh wasn't even the last bit of it. We still fought on to Barasu around towards the well. And I think you've seen all that stuff out there, so you kind of understand the terrain. And then you consolidate for getting ready to live fire, and you start the orders process, right? And that's how we did it, you know, then. It could be a little different for the regiment this time. But then we fought the live fire, 2 days of live fire all the way up to the northern side. And it was so the RCO and I were together at that point, watching as the sun come up over NTC the final day, right? It was hilarious, because as they called index of the live fire, I had walked up to the RCO's truck and I sat down and we're talking. As they called index, I looked away, and when I looked back, the RCO was out sleeping, right? Because he'd been going, right?
Yep.
I mean, everything he had, right? So, but that just shows you, like, our leaders put so much into taking care of our troopers and pushing and fighting the fight. That was only a couple weeks. We think about what LISCO could be, not weeks, months of fighting, right? Mm-hmm. And being on guard, that's going to be interesting. I mean, how do we combat that? How do we, the holistic health and fitness, how do we get those tenets where we can get those quick bursts? You hear them talk about Ukraine with kids sleeping or kitten or foxholes because they can't take it off. And that's rough. A lot of us, you know, we've been to Iraq, Afghanistan, but where'd you go? You went out and did a mission? right? It wasn't fun, but you came back to the fobs, the gems, the chow, the creature comforts, especially towards the end. It's not going to be like that anymore. We're all going to have to build some resiliency.
Yes.
You know, we can't lean back on how it used to be. We have to say, what is it going to be? And how do we fight through that? You know, uncomfortable kind of thing, dispersed a lot less, a little bit of unknown as you start moving different places. Like, okay, are they still with us? Because I ain't heard from them.
Sure. Well, and just the thought of reconstituting forces in real world, guys who are injured but are not expectant or immediate, and just putting them, patching them up and putting them back in the fight. I think about our Meadows and our young medics who have never been in any kind of combat environment, looking at the possibility of dealing with death on a massive scale, yeah, and having to send people back into the fight who are already injured. That's going to fracture some minds and some hearts for sure.
Oh, 100%, right? And it's not even that. It's, I watched a unit go from about a 50-man platoon to about a 10-man platoon in about a week. They got hit pretty hard, and it took a toll. So you think about 100 people in one squadron gone within the first hour or so, right? So when you look at the number, maybe it won't be that, but it's going to be significant. If you're, you know, not in that mindset to understand that, it's going to be pretty rough. I used to tell medics, or I talked to the soldiers too. I was like, all right, when you have to deal with a casualty, you might not know them.
Sure.
But what if that was your mom or dad on a stretcher right there? How is that going to affect you?
Sure.
Can you still operate in that mindset with that kid could be dying?
And constantly, right? Too, not just like then, one or two.
And then let's think about just our simple young medics at our role ones that are receiving casualties. They're gonna have to determine he can't be treated to put him over there. Receive those kids that are expecting, he's doing his evaluation. He has to make the determination that he's not gonna get treated because he's too far gone. I have to treat somebody else. Think about the weight of that on those kids, or even at your casualty collection points. Those young squad leaders and medics that have to make determination that kid they've been alongside for months, years, isn't going to make it. The best thing they can do is make him comfortable and focus on treating the ones that are going to survive. I mean, I know it sounds horrible, but there's a point where
it is a reality that we speculate upon frequently and try to plan for, because you have to plan for it.
But I don't know if there's anything in this world that can get you ready for that fact.
No. That's one thing you can't plan for.
There's still some of our kids that have experienced some of that are still left. They're still going around. Some of our leaders that haven't had to deal with those realizations and that actual life experience.
Yeah.
But they're few and far between. And sometimes that could put them into a spiral in itself, just the expectation of having to make that decision again.
So, Sergeant Major, let's just stop there for a second and shift the conversation a little bit as we get close to wrapping up. Everything that we've just talked about, the reality, the foreboding nature, if you will, of war is summarized in our planning efforts. The way we train is ideally the way that we fight. And so this is not a, hey, you go to Afghanistan when we've massed forces there and have some pretty solid structures. Like you said, a pretty cush life.
Yeah.
So if you're not going out on a target every other night, you're just kind of hanging out and you can get some green beans, coffee or whatever. We're looking at a very austere environment that is going to be a battlefield that's marked by heavy artillery, drone warfare, just a near-peer threat that has the same capabilities and assets that we do. So potentially a lot of death and destruction. With that being said, what would you say to somebody who is wanting to join the Army? And we all know that people join the Army for many reasons, but there are those people who join who really want to defend the freedoms of this country. What would you say to further perhaps inspire somebody to join for that reason, knowing that this is very much a possibility that they could face in the not too distant future?
Well, the hard part is, like, I mean, if you have somebody coming in that wants to join and wants to defend, right? It's like, okay, there's some sacrifice that is involved there. It's the kids that are unsure, right? That's the hard ones. Because when the realization hits them, that's saying, hey, wait a minute. What are we training for? I don't think even those kids who come in to the Army saying, hey, you know, I want to be here, they're still going to be in that, you know, we talk compliance versus commitment. They're still going to be in that compliance side where they're still trying to figure it out and they're not ready to give themselves to it, right?
So, sure.
I mean, if they can understand, hey, when you go out, you do your training, you build that camaraderie, that teamwork. That's where you start building that commitment to that person to your left and right. Mm-hmm. Right. That's where that desire to say, you know what, I want to serve something greater than myself really gets kind of ingrained as you start looking at, hey, you know what? Oh, Bob and Paul here, I want to make sure they can go home. I mean, as leaders, we're you know, you got a 20-year-old kid that you're going to say, hey, there's 9 other people that's yours. It's your responsibility. And we can train, we can push hard, right? But that's a lot of responsibility upon somebody mm-hmm. to go into the gunfire.
Yes, and right? to take 9 other people with you into the fray.
And the thing is as leaders, we have to be present. We have to be willing to do what our soldiers are doing. I mean, it might not be right, but I've ran through many doors before my soldiers. I've asked them to run through doors. I mean, a lot of us have done that. But they got to understand, hey, we will all sacrifice for each other because we're going to go home as much as we can. So as you look at, you know, service is about sacrifice in a way, right? You're gonna sacrifice your time. You're gonna sacrifice your being away from family. You're gonna train, but at the end of it, there are those who have gave the ultimate sacrifice and died for our country. That's kind of what we're carrying on is that legacy, and continue to push and support what they died for.
I have to admit, it is impressive and awe inspiring to see people lead with courage and tenacity. I remember. And this was by no means a combat environment, but that's the first time I'd ever seen this, where we were jumping out of the back of a Chinook. And that's not getting blasted out of the side of a C-130, where there's a little, amazingly enough, there's a little bit of comfort in getting blasted out. It's literally just a free fall for like 7 seconds before your chute opens. And the guy who was like first in our truck, he's just like, follow me. And then he just disappeared. And we're like, all right, that's awesome. I'm going to follow that guy out. And that's just one small display of courage that certain leaders possess. And ideally, we've all seen that on the battlefield as well, just the confidence, that not necessarily bravado, but in some cases it is bravado that gets people, that barrel-chested freedom fighter that is the one that's first in the stack, so to speak. But we need people like that. And I think if we do ever face a near-peer threats and we have conflict, like an actual force on force type conflict, like we're going to need a lot of people like that. So,
and you know, it's interesting too, because you'll see those who might be mediocre that excel in environments where that is required.
Yes.
Right. It's amazing to see the mental and the human aspect as people get put in situations with the fight or flight thing. There's no flight.
Yeah.
We're forced to fight. And then you see the best of people come out.
Yeah.
And sometimes you see the worst, but you see the best of people.
Well, and I've heard that paradigm before where, you know, the guy who's just the all-star in garrison just suddenly wilts in combat. And then that person who's kind of weak in garrison just rises to the occasion when you put them in combat.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. I think there will be people who we just kind of looked at maybe sideways when they were here, but you put them in a combat environment, then they're just like a totally different person. And that's encouraging to know that prospect exists.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, all the training we can do, that is the most important part, is to build the foundation.
Yes.
Because when things do happen, the training does kick in, right? The brain does go to autopilot to an extent, and everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing, right? So. Yeah. I mean, I think I've yelled more on a live fire range than I haven't actually yelled in a direct fire engagement because people knew as soon as things started happening, they knew where we were going, what we were doing.
Sure.
I just had to look and they were already moving
to
support each other. Right.
So That's awesome.
But it's based on the training you did before, on what value is it going to be? Are you actually taking advantage of all the time you have?
Right. Well, Sergeant Major, I really appreciate you again coming on the show. Can you tell the audience, like, what's your timeline? And I know where you're going, but what does your timeline look like? Where are you heading next?
So I will be, as of right now, the tentative date will be 21 January. Okay. I will assume responsibility at NTC as lead 7.
Okay. Yep. We saw where your picture is going to be.
Yeah.
In their little in building 130. So we're like, that's where Sergeant Major's picture is going to be. So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So okay. I have the opportunity to come out and kind of get some interactions with units as they come through.
Yeah.
Kind of help, you know, hopefully I get to help shape kind of some of the challenges and some of the realism that we're pushing on to, you know, organizations. Yeah. But I also get to take care of the families and the soldiers and the civilians on Fort Irwin itself, you know, and help further that organization.
Fort Irwin is interesting because it seems like they're trying to build up this unique community there because there is nothing there. They have to do it. But I just thought to myself, this would be a pretty awesome location if there was stuff like outside the gate besides just desert.
Yeah, so. There is a lot of challenges. Like I said, I've never been stationed there. Yeah. I know people who have been. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I'm going to have Melissa's going to be out there a little more with me. So
good.
That'll be great. It's going to be a challenge. I mean,
sure.
I'm 100%. It's going to be something new, something that I'm eager to learn.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I have always been is present. And that's what I think will help too, is just being out there.
Sure.
Make sure 100%. Everybody's taken care of and doing what we can to help.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on and we'll catch up down the road.
Aye-ya.
Aye-ya. That was Command Sergeant Major Michael McEnroy, 26th Regimental Command Sergeant Major of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. Great to have him on the show with us. If you liked what you heard, please leave some comments with your preferred streaming service. And by all means, give us a thumbs up as we are trying to expand our listening audience. Have a great week. Aye-ya.